Welcome to the September episode of our IASB Updates podcast, where we bring you the latest news from our recent IASB meeting. I am Neely Shaw, Executive Technical Director of the IASB, and joining me today are Linda Mizan-Hutter, Vice Chair, and Nick Anderson, one of our IASB board members. Welcome both. So, in September, we discussed seven projects. In today's episode, we will focus on two of them. The first being the equity method project, and the second, financial instruments with characteristics of equity. And then towards the end, we'll also share some recent changes to our work plan. So let's start with the equity method project. And Linda, if I could start with you, could you provide our listeners with a reminder of what we are trying to accomplish with this project?
Absolutely. And I'm very happy to talk about the equity method because it's been a little while since we did an update on the equity method project. So let's remind everybody, the primary objective of the equity method project is to address various application questions and also improve the understandability of IAS 28. So the key areas include clarifying how to measure the cost of the associate or joint venture when the investor obtains significant influence, how to account for changes in ownership, and how to recognize gains or losses from transactions with associates and joint ventures. Now, as you'll probably recall, we published the exposure draft in September of 2024, proposing amendments to IAS 28 to address application questions and introduce new disclosure requirements. We received over 100 comment letters and participated in dozens of outreach events, and I'd like to take this opportunity to say how much we truly appreciate all the time and thoughtful feedback that you shared with us. That really helps us with our work. Since the comment period closed, we've been making steady progress on re-deliberating these proposals, and importantly, in June, we decided to keep the project's objectives unchanged and to apply a very high hurdle to any new application questions. We would only consider adding them if they could be resolved in a very timely manner and would not result in having us to re-expose our proposals.
Thanks, Linda. Very helpful background. So, Nick, turning over to you, could you provide a summary of the specific decisions that the IASB made in September?
Yes, of course. So at the September meeting, we made some important decisions as we continue to re-deliberate the proposals. First thing we decided was to add a new application question to the project scope. And that question is, how does an investor recognize acquisition-related costs when applying the equity method? This was in response to stakeholder feedback that our proposed definition of the cost of associated created uncertainty about whether acquisition-related costs should be included as part of the carrying amount of the investment. Linda mentioned the high hurdle a moment ago that we agreed in our June meeting. And applying that high hurdle, we decided not to add any other application questions suggested by stakeholders at this stage. We decided, however, to explore whether to separately clarify which entities are eligible to measure investments within the scope of the standard at fair value through profit loss. Some of our stakeholders have informed us about the interaction between this question and IFRS 18 in the assurance industry. As you know, IFRS 18 is effective from the 1st of January 2027. We have asked the staff to move quickly and come back to us in October, if possible, with more information so we don't disrupt the implementation of IFRS 18.
Thanks, Nick. We are already on it, so stay tuned for more on that one. Nick, we also had an important decision within the equity method project on what we call the layers approach. Can you explain what we mean by that and what the board discussed?
We did talk about layers. So here we're referring to investor purchases of additional ownership interests in associate while it retains significant influence. One consequence of the proposal is that the investor would measure for each purchase of an additional interest its share of the associate's net assets measured at fair value. Now, this approach means that the investor's share of the associate's net assets are measured at different dates. We've received mixed feedback from stakeholders on this. Some stakeholders accepted our rationale and some respondents expressed concerns about cost and complexity. They told us the approach could be burdensome. It requires purchase price allocations for each additional purchase, and these are often performed by external consultants. We didn't actually make any final decisions, but we agreed to explore relief from the proposals. And this reflects our effort really to balance conceptual rigor with those practical implementation concerns.
Thanks, Nick. But if it's okay with you, I'd just like to add one additional thought in terms of our discussion of the equity method. In terms of our timing, I think it's important for our stakeholders to know that we've decided to take some extra time to consider significant concerns expressed by certain of our stakeholders about some of the proposals. We want to better understand the underlying causes of the concerns so that we can deliberate alternatives before making our tentative decisions. We will continue to progress as we work through the redeliberations of our EDE proposals, and this additional time will help us do that on a thorough basis.
All right. Thank you both. So let's move on to our second topic today. This is our financial instruments with characteristics of equity project, which is a mouthful, so we tend to just call it FICE for short. The objective of this project is to clarify the distinction between financial liabilities and equity instruments on a company's balance sheet, especially when we're looking at hybrid instruments, which are those financial instruments that have characteristics of both debt and equity. Linda, as you know, we published our exposure draft in late 2023, and we have been redeliberating proposals since May of 2024. Can you remind our listeners of where we are in this project?
Certainly, I'm happy to do that. So we have concluded our decision-making on proposals related to the presentation of equity instruments and some of the disclosures. We decided that entities should separately present profit or loss attributable to ordinary shareholders, participating rights holders, and non-participating rights holders, with additional disclosure requirements to enhance the usefulness of this presentation. We also decided to retain the proposed disclosure requirements related to the nature of claims against an entity, terms and conditions, and the maximum dilution of ordinary shares relating subject to a number of refinements that we discussed. We've started redeliberation on the classification topics, but plan further discussions. And we've decided to withdraw the proposed requirements related to the effects of relevant laws or regulations on the classification of financial instruments. We concluded that the lack of consensus on the underlying principles means that finalizing those proposals would not achieve our objectives. Solving concern would involve more fundamental work that would be beyond the scope of this particular project.
Thanks, Linda. So then coming to September, Nick, can I turn it over to you?
Yes. Yeah, so in September, we made decisions on two classification areas, the first being reclassification requirements and the second shareholder discretion. So for reclassification, we agreed to proceed with the proposed amendments with targeted refinements. So let me explain those. We clarified that reclassification would apply to changes in the substance of contractual arrangement that do not create or extinguish contractual rights or obligations or modify the contractual terms. We also clarified that external circumstances are events after classification that are significant, demonstrable to external parties, and generally expected to be infrequent. And we also decided to require reclassification to financial liability, from financial liability to equity when contractual terms stop being effective, but only for instruments containing obligations to deliver the equity's own equity instruments.
Got it. And you mentioned that there were two topics. So you covered reclassifications, and then the second is shareholder discretion. What were the discussions there?
So here we agreed to finalize the proposed factors-based approach for assessing at initial recognition whether shareholders' decisions are treated as entity decisions subject to minor drafting improvements. We also agreed to clarify underlying principles, namely that entities need to apply judgment when considering the contractual terms, the specific facts and circumstances, the capacity in which shareholders are acting, together with appropriate weightings for each factor and the interactions of multiple decision-making rights. Importantly, we confirmed that no single factor is determinative on its own, and entities must consider all relevant facts together.
Thanks, Nick. So in terms of next steps on our FICE project, the board will continue to redeliberate the exposure draft proposals, taking into account the valuable feedback we've heard from our stakeholders. So stay tuned for more on that as well. So let's move to a few important updates that I had mentioned. The first is on our agenda consultation, and then we have some other updates to the IASB's work plan. Starting with the agenda consultation, as background, many of you are probably aware that the IASB conducts a process to consult its stakeholders every 5 years to determine its technical strategy and work plan. Linda, could you share what happened in September?
Absolutely happy to do that. So some of our listeners may remember that in our July podcast, we noted that our sister board, the ISSB, decided to begin work on their agenda consultation in later 2026 and publish a request for information in 2027. Now, I'll be honest that that's faster than we originally thought that they were going to be able to do that. Now, to remind you, we had been working on our fourth agenda consultation with the intention to publish a request for information in October of 2025. However, in light of the news from the ISSB, we decided in September to suspend this work and align our timing with that of the ISSB. Now, the main reason for this is to make things easier for our stakeholders by only going to market once in 2027, rather than the ISSB going to market in 2025, and then the ISSB going to market in 2027, and our stakeholders having to respond twice. Now, we acknowledge this throws off our normal five-year cycle, but this is just a one-time decision to be practical and to be helpful to our stakeholders. So in the meantime, until we complete our next agenda consultation, the board will consider adding new projects to its work plan as resources become available. And of course, all of our discussions and decisions on this will be made in our public meetings.
Yep. Thanks, Linda. And then, Nick, as I had mentioned, we had a couple changes to the IASB work plan. Can you share a bit more about that?
Yes, of course. So the first is on rate-regulated activities. Here, we now expect the final standard to be issued in the second quarter of 2026 instead of December of this year, as originally anticipated. And the second is on dynamic risk management. We are on track to publish the exposure draft in the fourth quarter of this year, but that's more likely to be in December now compared to our previous plan of October. In both cases, we're introducing some new models for complex transactions, and so we really want to make sure that we have time to invest in extra time to invest in drafting clear and understandable documents.
Great. Thank you, Linda and Nick. And listeners, thank you for joining us in this episode. We look forward to bringing you further updates on these important projects as they continue to develop, and we hope you can join us for the October episode.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.